It's you know, it's the whole community, so it's kind of everything in the community. It's
nice.
This is done by
Padma Lachan
and his wife. His wife, I think, is the editor.
Like that.
That's why you get this, you know, you are welcome. So, in English, if just on its own, it kind of says you are welcome, and there's not a thing for it. It generally means you're saying you are welcome, meaning you should be doing something that I would be saying you are welcome for. It means you're not doing something you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, yes.
You know? And that's how it's kind of used. You know, it's like you come in and just walk in and just sit there and take something, and I go, you're welcome. You know, and they're supposed, oh, okay, thank you. You know, like that. But in the East Bloc, you are welcome is the way that they're meaning you are welcome to come. You right. know, it's like kind of like inviting.
Yeah, that's why they're doing this part of the world.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. So in when the Russians and others, when they send you, you know, invitations, and they say you are welcome, all these things, it just means that, you know, you're welcome to come. You know. In other words, it would be like in English, you'd say, you know, please feel at any time. You know, yeah, like that. You know. So, but somehow or another, it just comes off from me. So if you get. Why is it sometimes it goes off very quickly and sometimes it stays for longer?
Screen.
Yeah.
Is the screen saver?
No, but sometimes it goes off after a couple of minutes, and sometimes it goes off after longer than a couple of minutes. Doesn't seem to have any particular parity, either that or I get so absorbed in talking that I don't notice the difference in time.
And I really think it would be appropriate if you could speak about, you know, sometimes to explain the Guru as a representative of Nityananda Prabhu, sometimes Guru is one of the forms of Srimati Radharani. It's a difference. If there is a difference, and where, if there is really one who is Nityananda Prabhu's representative, another is Radharani, when one leaves and stops his job and starts, you know, because the other day we were talking about Diksha until Svarupa Sivi, then Diksha is no more.
Means the function of Diksha, but the Diksha Guru is the Siksha Guru in our line. That aspect
could be the same person, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just in The difficulty comes in all these is that the main problem comes is that, see, there's two basically kinds of preaching. There is the nourishing of the devotional creeper, and there is the removal of the obstacles. Like that. So that's two kind of separate functions. It means they're connected, but they're two different aspects of the same thing. Like some water.
Yes.
Water? No? Yes? No? Since no one else wants to know. Somehow it doesn't sound like the downstairs door banging. It sounds like our pews. Yeah. So then, so this connection with always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. It's the same thing, but it comes from two different angles. So therefore it actually carries a different flavor. Always remember Krishna means those things that inspire you to remember Krishna. You know, the chanting, the association of devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, serving the deity, living in the Dham, those things that are they're directly devotional service, they're directly inspiring. Then you have then you have those activities which, by doing them, then it situates you in a situation in which you could remember Krishna. In other words, it removes the obstacles or things that would make one forget. You know? Like taking your bath in the morning doesn't make you remember Krishna. It means remembering Krishna is worked into the ritual of taking bath. Means that the final means you go in the shower and then you put some soap and scrub and do this and that. When you finally rinse off and then that's you're going to leave. That time, that aspect of the shower, you should remember the Lord. Like that. So that's just part of the ritual of taking bath. And the rest of it you may or may not remember. That's there. But the purpose of taking the bath is so that you're clean, and by being clean and doing it at that time and that way, it situates you in goodness, and in goodness then it's illuminating, so it's easier to remember. So someone in goodness comes in contact with hearing, chanting, you know, associating, worshipping the deity, then very easily they will remember. Someone in ignorance, even they come in contact, they may be so much in ignorance they don't notice the deity, they're absorbed in this and that. And even in doing them, they may be so distracted. You know? So it just brings one closer. You know, so goodness is as close as you can get to, material goodness is as close as you can get to liberation. Liberation means then there is anartha nivritti is complete. You know, all the anarthas are removed, means from the material side. You know, okay, then... So we see Balaram, because he's Shankarshan, and his business is establishing dharma and removing the obstacles. What's adharmic he removes, what is dharma he establishes. Like that. Plus he's attractive, so he attracts us, he engages the senses. In the Lord's service, he sets the example. So all those different aspects are there in Balaram. Well, we see basically Srimati Radharani, though all that is, that means those elements are there, but it's more, you see, Radharani's side is the always remember Krishna. The chanting, the holy names, this and that. But Balaram, that's what he's establishing. But he specifically deals with removing the anarthas, while Radharani is more dealing with nourishing what's there. Like that. So therefore the guru could himself be representing both. Or it could mean that the line of the gurus is coming down through those who are servants of Srimati Radharani, so they represent, or those who are servants of Nityananda. In other words, the guru is in the line of the conjugal rasa, the guru is in the line of the other rasas. Sakya Vatsalya and that, because all that is expanded from Balaram. Yeah. So it could also mean that. So either could be meant by it.
Because I read something Gaura Govinda Swami about your lecture gives. He explains that once a person is under the charge of Radharani, then Nityananda has nothing to do. Balaram has nothing to do, he's not his camp. But she accepts only one who has been introduced by Nityananda.
Yes.
Unless he's favored by Nityananda, she will never accept. She will never be introduced in her camp, and she will never be trained by a guru with her camp. Unless Balaram is there first, it means in any case, has to go through.
Because it's also, you see, the first one that comes basically is Ananga. So Ananga is that internal potency of Balaram. This is?
In case we get in
Ananga. Is you can keep it, put it on the table. So Ananda is also there within the pastimes of Radharani. Is that she? Because Ananda is her sister, and she's the Dham. So then she comes and then engages you in activities and trains that, you know, that along with your spiritual master and the acharyas, then they train one in how to serve Radha and Krishna. And then when one's trained, then one gets the opportunity. So even then, is Radharani accepts one as a servant also when Ananda is, you know, pleased. So also even within, that's there. But otherwise, yeah, because Nityananda, then he frees us from the material conception. So until we're freed from the material conception, then how will Radharani engage us? Because devotional service means freedom from that. You know, so the minimum, I mean, where things get serious are at the point that it is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing here is the Madhyama. Because then the Madhyama then is, situated on a platform where the material motivations aren't their motive for performing devotional service. And those things that are favorable to Krishna, that's what they want to perform. That is their purpose. So therefore, their situation is then, that's where seriously devotional service can come. But that's only by the grace of Nityananda that one is able to cross that first major hurdle of anartha nivritti. It means the first one is there. It means you have Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, Anartha Nivritti. So when that Anartha Nivritti is crossed, means that our Bhajana becomes steady. So it becomes steady because we've given up those motivations. So then we, in Nishtha, that's where you start the Madhyama. That's why it's considered this is advanced and this is serious, because then they're fixed in devotional service. Before that, their Bhajana Kriya is Anishtha. So it's sometimes, you know, this way, sometimes it's very enthusiastic, sometimes not, or you have motives, or you're not quite sure what to do, or, you know, all these different things. Or bewildered by the benefits that come from devotional service. You know, like that. You know, like let's say one devotee is, either the devotee himself, by doing nice preaching and that, they're appreciated. So facility comes, and then he thinks, you know, yes, he gets attached to this facility, or he feels it's due to him, or he's the cause of it. All these different things that are there, that they're coming from devotional service, this opulence that comes from devotional service. And trying to take advantage of that, enjoy that. So then that itself then is a very major thing. When one gets a taste for chanting the holy name, basically that goes away. You know, that kind of endeavor is not seen. So then, that's the first stage of anartha nivritti. So sometimes we hear about it talked about there. Then you have nishtha, ruchi, asakti, these are the madhyama platform. Then between asakti and bhava, then that is where Brahma-bhuta positions obtain. So that's the second stage of anartha nivritti. So that anartha nivritti means you've removed the need for functioning. Means you've removed the conditioned consciousness. So there's no more conditioned consciousness at that
point.
Yeah, it means you're in the body, you have the mind in that, but you don't identify with it. Then you're an uttam. So then at that point, then you go beyond it. So then that stage is also known as anartha-nivritti. It's not, it would, in Shraddha prema, then you put anartha-nivritti between the end of kanistha and the beginning of madhyama. But at the same time as that, in the second anartha-nivritti, that's the most important one. Because from that, then you're out beyond the conditioned nature. So then one can serve Krishna in one's spiritual nature. That's the platform that one can serve then. But at the same time as that platform is the platform of the Tathasta. Then you're back to where we started from. We're back on the Tathasta platform. So now, the difference now is that we have a taste for devotional service and we have the goal to develop love for Krishna. Therefore, one will generally go through that Tathasta platform quite quickly and easily. While previously not necessarily having that attraction, then lack of attraction will turn into aversion. Yeah, and then we'll go into the material nature. That then is there. So that anartha-nivritti, we see in the Nectar Devotion, in the first part, in I think 16th chapter, where it talks about spontaneous devotional service. So then, that spontaneous devotional service, then it's mentioned that can be taken up after anartha-nivritti. So depending upon the individual, it will be at either of these two points, either at nishta or at bhava. At either of these two points, like that. What would be called anartha-nivritti. It can happen anywhere in between, but these are where would be the typical two points. So now, most will take it that it means the one at the beginning of nishta. But we see Vishwanath also describes it as coming as meaning the one coming after asakti. Because he mentions that spontaneous devotional service can be taken up at either of these two places. Someone may perform Vaidhi Bhakti up to bhava. So his whole course of sadhana bhakti is Vaidhi. And then at bhava bhakti, then he switches into spontaneous, into raghavata. And or it can be taken that it can be started at this point. Depends upon the nature of the individual. So that aspect is there.
Cannot even never take the spontaneous.
Then that means they'll go
to Vaikuntha.
They'll go to Vaikuntha, Dwarka and down. Then they'll go to Dwarka. Or if they're worshipping Krishna, they'll go to Dwarka. To worship him.
It's just because it's their constitutional nature, they will never be awakened.
They prefer. Means here, the Lord is always the Lord, and there must be, you know, some rules on how to. The rules as a medium are important. While for the Braja Bhakti, then the rules are not what's important. It's pleasing Krishna is the importance. So that spontaneous, the spontaneity makes the uniqueness of flavor. The principle. Want to say something?
Yeah. I have a question. Yeah. This one thing about this. This is the example of Anupama. You can take the example of Anupama, Rupa Goswami's younger brother. Even though he preached so long about this brother Bhakti, all night he preached to me. It's particularly called this other association, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everything, but then I just can't.
Yeah, it means all devotees can accept Lord Chaitanya. But Radha and Krishna, then that's another thing. Also, I think Mahārāja Gupta,
they appreciate the merits of Brajan and everything, but just it's not part of their need.
No. It's just like you can appreciate, you know, other people dealing with their family and the interactions. You appreciate it. It's nice, and you can say this is very nice, or that's
another is, you know, less nice. You can even say that their interactions are better than the interactions in our own family. But still, you know, at the end of the day, you stick to your own family and the interactions and all that. So it can always be appreciated. That's the point that Prabhupada's making, is that where someone says they can't listen to all these other things and don't want to hear these other things, and you know, then they can only hear about the gopis, then Prabhupada's point is that's a conditioned soul's concept. That's not a liberated soul's concept. Because liberated platform, the taste is in anything spiritual. It means there's no taste in anything material, and you've gotten, and on the spiritual platform, then anything spiritual has taste. Something may have more taste, but there's no such thing as no taste, because all of the spiritual world is tasting. It's just perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So the Dwarka pastimes and these other Vaikuntha, they're perfect. So they're tasty to listen to, but the other is more perfect. It's just more than this, you know. It's like you have some, how you say, you have some cream, and the cream's nice. You know, you put some mango in it, it's more nice. You put some sugar in it, it's even more nice. It's not anything, it's nice, you know. So it's always nice. So that aspect is therefore, we see Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't appreciate these aspects. That people would put this thing, oh, I have no taste for those things. I just, let's hear the Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. It means it's like that. If one has the opportunity, one hears. But other things, you hear, they're also heard. You know? I mean, it's like Sukadeva Goswami has no problem talking about the Dwarka pastimes. You know? Because the point is if it's a matter of, it's not just the conjugal rasa only can't relate. It would be the braja mood wouldn't be able to relate. If we're taking this as a fact, as a bona fide platform, then how would he, as a braja bhakta, be able to sit there through all the aspects of Krishna's creation and all the avatars and association with all his devotees and all these different things? How would he get through all that, you know? So that's the thing, is that it's all tasty. But of it, then yes, it's all nice. Just like someone likes sweets, all sweets are nice, but of sweets they may prefer this one, a rasgulla or a sandesh or a kheer or lovely. Like that, that's their favorite. So if they had their they'll take that. You say, okay, all these are here, which one do you want? Oh, they'll take this. But if all that's available is another sweet, they'll happily eat it. It's nice because it's sweet. So it's there. Because these other, you see the gopis, when they're talking to Krishna, they refer to all these things. You know, Madhu Mangal, when he's talking to Krishna, he's referring to all the different scriptures. Because he's a Brahmin, so therefore, when he's eating, then he's referring to the Bharatas, not the Shastra, which is, you know, on rasa and, you know, theater and all these different things. So then, can you mention to them unless you can on that side or in the room or somewhere else? Yes, so Madhu Mangal, he's then talking to Krishna, you know, and he says, this Bharat Muni says that there's 8 Sattvika Bhavas, you know, the standing of the hair on the end, and all these different kinds of things, you know, the choking of the voice and tears in the eyes and all these different things, says that in my experience there's only six. And then he picks six of those eight and basically connects everything to eating. You know? When I see the food, then, you know, tears come to my eyes, or my hair stand on end, and when I taste it, then, you know, my body becomes stunned. And you know, he goes through all the ecstatic emotions, but all in relationship to food, you know, like that. You know, or the gopis, the elderly gopis, they come to Madhu Mangal and they ask him, because he's young, he's not old. But at the same time, as it's known, it's the rule of the Dharma, is that for a Brahmin, age doesn't matter, it's knowledge. So if he has knowledge, it doesn't matter if he's 5 years old, he's your guru. You know. So therefore they come to him and with respect and they ask him, so what have you studied? You know, so they can find out what he knows, and then they know whether to ask him the questions or, you know, not. And so he says, studied this, that, so many things, you know, everything. You know, so then, you know, and then they say, okay, then maybe you can answer our question. See, we have this great problem, big calamity. We wouldn't even wish this calamity on our enemies. The people we hate, we wouldn't want this happen to them. So he says, what's the problem? He says, these girls, our daughters, that they're married, but they completely neglect their husbands. They have nothing to do with their husbands. They show no affection. They don't do anything with that. You know, because their daughters are all out with Krishna. You know, so but they don't know that. They just know they neglect all the time, and they're always worried about Krishna because they hear rumors that Krishna, you know, doesn't behave nicely with the girls and all this. So then, you know, they keep them at their house, and you know, they make rules. They can't go out and all these things. So he says yes. Something in, you know, Jyotish, he starts going off into that. And then he says, but there's a remedy for this. He says there's this a special puja they can do. And then he mentions a name of Cupid. That's not doesn't mean Cupid, but some fancy Sanskrit name. You know, like that. It wouldn't be easily, you know, if you knew Sanskrit you might understand, but if you didn't, then you might miss the point that that's what you just said. And so then he says that there's a special puja that they can do and that will solve the problem. So he says, so they should do this 3 times a day. So they should go out into the forest, pick flowers and do this puja to Kamadev. Like that. And then everything will be okay. So all the elderly gopis say, how is this done? They pick flowers, do this, that. So then they're all okay. Then they call all the daughters, sit them down, and okay, now, you know, you have to do this puja and this. You have to go out into the forest every day and pick these flowers. And you have to do puja to this Kamadev. And the gopis know who this Kamadev is. They know it's Krishna. And they're sitting here and going, am I hearing what I'm hearing? Is this for real or what? You know, here, you know, our parents who have been our obstacle for going and seeing Krishna are very seriously in a religious mood telling us to go out there and pick flowers and worship Krishna. Then, you know, they're just sitting there going, what's going on? So whatever it is, so they sit there and very soberly as good daughters, you know, daughters and daughters-in-law and all that, then they're saying this, okay. All this, and then they all get together, and then their mothers and mothers-in-law telling, okay, now go pick flowers and do this puja and all this, yes, going out. And can't believe. So, like this, the Brajavasis, they use the scriptures. They go, Radharani goes to worship the sun god every day. You know? Krishna gets out of being caught in a kunj in the early morning, because at some different times a year they go to different places. You know, like in the winter, they'll suddenly take bath in their house, or the gopis go out for the Katyayani puja, or sometimes summer they'll go out early because the sun comes up early and it's warm. They go to the Jamuna to bathe rather than bathe in their house. These different things. So then they'll meet Krishna at those times, you know. But Jatila and Kutila, they all figure something's going on. So Kutila likes to spy. So then she comes down and then she, you know, comes and she figures that, you know, Krishna's in this kunja with Radharani. You know, so then she comes barging into the kunj, and then Krishna just turns into a deity, takes the form of a deity of Kali. Kali. You know, four-armed, you know, black, everything, standing there, you know, like this. You know, and Radharani's in there, so it's like, comes in and like, you know, ah, I caught you, and this and that with Krishna, and it's kind of like, oh. She says, no, we can't take our bath in the Jamuna, then we're worshipping Goddess Kali, that for the prosperity of our family and husbands and, you know, everything like that. And then, oh, okay. You know, it has to go. So without all these different scriptural things, there wouldn't be any, how you would do all the pastimes, you know? In other words, they're following all the different rules of Dharma, but not because it's rules of Dharma. It's just, you have to have some medium for rasa. That's it. It means you want to show affection to somebody, you have to show it through something. You know, you can't just sit there in a telepathy, you know, like that. It's not like Reiki or something. You know, it's like you show the affection. You have to, you know, some exchange, something, some interaction. So something is chosen as a medium. You know, a gift or a word or, you know, some food or like this, you know. That means vidati pratigunati guhya makati bichati bhunkte vajayate. So through prasadam, through gifts, through, you know, intimate discussions, confidential discussions, then affection is shown. So therefore we see the Brajavasis also follow the Varanashram, but it's only as a medium for showing expression to Krishna. The rules themselves aren't the purpose. Well, when you get to Dwarka, then the rule itself has importance, and following that rule has importance. So therefore, then, it takes on that flavor. Though it's not as intense as Ayodhya. Ayodhya is more. And then Vaikuntha is the most. Like that, because in Dwarka it's like he's God, but at the same time he's their friend. So it's a mix, like you see, Devaki and Vasudeva. When Krishna is born, he comes in that four-armed form and all that. They immediately offer their prayers, Supreme Lord, and this and that. And then after that, then the parental feelings arise, and then they say, "Please come in the form of a baby." And then comes the Lord Kali. He sees you like this; he's definitely going to get upset because he doesn't like Vishnu, you know. So, you know, so that parental mood to protect him, to be as a small child, you know, to be hidden and this and that. And so then it's there. But Mother Jashoda, when she sees the universal form of Krishna's mouth, then everything just stops. Because, you know, her son's not God, you know. And even if he is, he shouldn't be eating dirt, you know. Plenty of nice sweets and everything else to eat. Why do you need to eat dirt? You know, so it's just, she's just looking at all this and getting totally bewildered. So then Krishna removes it, and then immediately she just goes back to how everything is. Like that. So it's a different flavor. In other words, Dharma is used differently. Dharma means what's the nature of it. So the nature of the gopis' love, the nature of Mother Yashoda's love, the Brajabhakti, it's a nature, it's a Dharma. So also Dwarka, the mood of Dwarka, that's also Dharma. The mood of the servants there, the mood of the servants in Vaikuntha, the mood of the conditioned souls in the true world, it's all Dharma. But if it's done to please Krishna, it makes it favorable. And it's done without desire for material motive or impersonal gain, any of these material gains. So then without that, then they basically start to become devotional service. They're considered pure, and that's pure devotional service. So then, in the material world, the conditioned soul is using its conditioned nature as the medium, and the rules of Dharma as they apply to his conditioned nature. To the liberated soul, then he's using it according to what is the nature of his spiritual form, and that's according to his mood. Like that. So his mood means it's a Dharma. Means within Dharma you have the material Dharma, and then you have the spiritual Dharma. Within spiritual Dharma, then you have the Vaikuntha Dharma, you have your Dwarka, Mathura, Braj. Within Braj Dharma, then you have five Dharmas. You know, Shanta, Shanta Dasya Shakya Vatsalya Madhurya. That's five religions. And within that, then they have their breakdowns. There are those who are younger friends in Krishna, equal friends to Krishna, older friends in Krishna, intimate friends of Krishna. Like this. So all you have, so those are all religions. They're all religions. They're within the category of Vaishnava religion. They're in the category of Braja Bhakti. But, you know, they're specific, and then within that, even the gopis, you have your right wing, you have your left wing, you have those within Radharani's camp, those in other camps, those who are maidservants, those who are friends, sakis, you know, so are equals, so they also are heroines, like that. So you have all that kind of thing. You know? So then that becomes, they're all religions. Want to say so many religions have, no. Religion simply means what's the nature. The lamp has a religion. You know? Earth has a religion. Water has a religion. You know, everything has its religion. So the Vedic religion means understanding all these religions. And the perfection of Vedic is understanding all these relations in connection with the spiritual. And then within the spiritual, then you have your particular place. So simply understanding what is the nature. So that's the importance of becoming conscious. You become conscious what is the nature of everything. You know, it's just like, you know, people say, well, what's wrong with, you know, why do you discriminate against the dogs? But that means that person hasn't studied the nature of a dog. He's ignorant as to the religion of a dog. So the dog's religion is basically they're not clean. You know, they'll happily go in the summer, sit in the sewer because it's wet, it's cool. Right? It's very common in Vrindavan. You don't see here so much, but they're in Vrindavan because there's so many drains. In the summertime, they're all sitting in the drains in the middle of the day. So their body's like half in the water. Yeah, dirty, funky water. Same water the pigs are going through. For the pigs, it's something to eat. For the dogs, it's their air conditioning. You know, it's their, you know, it's like, you know, like we'll go to the beach or, you know, go to the swimming pool. They go sit in the sewer. You know? You're generally more likely to see them in the sewer than you will see them, let's say, in the Jamuna or something else. Though, if they're there, you do sometimes see them sitting there. If it's shallow enough, they'll sit there also. But generally, the sewers are a little cooler.
You know? Only the more advanced of the government.
Yeah. So whatever. So they don't discriminate. They'll eat anything. You know, they go anywhere. They're always fighting this, that. So therefore, when it comes to situations of cleanliness, therefore dogs aren't clean. So therefore, according to the dog religion, they shouldn't be allowed here because this is a different religion. This is the religion of deity worship, or the religion of your household, or the religion of your own personal hygiene. But they have many good qualities like that. We can learn so much from dogs. You know, their loyalty, their satisfaction with with whatever you give them. And they're happy with whatever you give. They don't complain. You give them half a chapati, they're happy. You give them 10 chapatis, they're happy. Like that, whatever it is, they reciprocate. You give them anything, the dog will immediately be looking and wagging its tail, and, you know, like that. So whatever you give it, it's not that it'll only eat this, not that. You know, they're happy. Whatever you give, you know, like this, very loyal. They also sleep immediately. When they wake up, they're active. You know, they don't sit there and they're slow for a while and motor ignorance. No. From the moment they wake up, they can stand up and do anything. You know, they don't have a moment of any being kind of spaced out. You know, like that, you can see. You go up and, you know, if something goes by a dog or, you know, bumps into them or something, they're awake, fully alert. So that's also a very good quality. You know? So like this, from them, and you can learn things. But then this is the study of the nature of the dog. So the good qualities you take and imbibe in your own character. You know, means you say, says we discriminate dogs against dogs. These are bad qualities, yes. But the good qualities, no. The good qualities we study them and imbibe the dog's nature in these areas, but not in other natures. You know, we're not going to go around and sniff everything that's vertical and pass urine on it. No, we wouldn't do that. You know, that's, you know, other aspects of the dog's dharma. So that's, you know, not for us. That's their, you know, their, I'd say, relevance in life, you know. So, but what's useful, we take. So therefore, that is religion. That's the nature, is seeing what it is and then taking it. So that's why it's so much of the time ununderstood. Sometimes it seems so much philosophy. Without the philosophy, you can't understand where the religion is coming from, why it's there, what's its purpose, what's its goal. And then without the other shastras that say how to do the things, your dharma shastras, your artha, your niti shastras, you know, like this, you won't know how to act. So then, with the combination of the two, then it works. Because if you have philosophy without religion, it's just speculation. Because then it could be this way, it could be that way, it could be so many ways. But, you know, and then, you know, so the religion actually brings the philosophy to the ground. It's the culture. But then the religion without philosophy is sentiment. You see, nowadays, so many followers of the Vedas, they don't know what the Vedas are, why they're doing, and all their sentiment. Their parents did it. If they actually have that value, they follow it. If they don't have the value, then they give it up. You see, the youth of today, they don't follow. Like that, well, a few things they'll do. I'm sure that there's many things they'll do. You know, they'll come in the morning, maybe touch your parents' feet, or a few things. But the dress, the hairstyle, the talk, what they eat, that's changed. Music they listen to. It's all just changing, because they didn't imbibe the values. So then it's just sentiment. So the actual thing is that both have to be there. Problem comes is each side will fight against the other. That's niyamagraha. One is following the rule just for the rule's sake, the other one's throwing it out because they don't understand it. You know? Like you'll see, generally simple people, they've been told this is what you do, they do it, they're not bewildered. Who's bewildered? Intellectuals are bewildered. Or a common person's been bewildered by intellectuals. The intellectuals, many times, they're the ones that don't understand, because they read so many things so they can't understand. That's why it says don't read too many books. So too many books means, you know, it's like overeating. If someone says don't overeat, can you say exactly what that is? Because for one person, overeating means, you know, two buckets of rice instead of one bucket. And for another person, you know, one spoon is too much. Maybe half a spoon. So you can't say, you just give the general thing of what's overeating. Overeating, so then probably gives a simple definition. Overeating means what you can't digest. If you can digest it, that's right. If you can't digest it, it's overeating. So maybe half a chapati is overeating. If you can't digest the chapati, then for you to eat the chapati is overeating. Like that. Or someone else may eat 20 chapatis, and for them it's not. So then they get bewildered by, you know, it's so different. You know, here's half a chapati, he's 20 chapatis. How many chapatis am I supposed to eat? You know, 7 3/4. You know, I mean, it's like, how you can't say. So the same way reading, studying books, says don't read too many books, means what you can digest, you read. Or if you can't digest it, don't read it. Some people say, wow, I read this and I can't understand. It means don't read that. You shouldn't be reading that. Like that. So that's why. And I said, no, but it's contradictory. This one says this. Yeah, that's why you shouldn't be reading. You understand this book? Yes, read that book. You understand that book? No, don't read that book. Because both are right. You have to know how to connect them. You know, Baba gives you that story of the veterinarian. Right? And he had an assistant. So one day they were called to somebody's house, and he had this horse, and the horse had a huge lump in its neck. You know, and the horse was suffering a lot. So then doctor looked at the lump and opened the mouth of the horse, looked inside, called for a hammer, took the hammer and then beat the horse on the side of the neck really hard. And then after that, then the horse was okay. So then the assistant thought, wow, this is simple. No problem. So he opened his own practice, and then any time that they would call him to the animals, he would take his hammer and hit him on the neck, and so many animals were killed. And so then he couldn't understand what happened. So then he was thinking, what's going on here? So he went back to the doctor, the actual veterinarian, and asked him, we went to that one day, the horse, and had a big lump, you hit him on the neck, and he got better. And I do it, and then they die. Why is that? So he says, that horse that we went to that day, he had swallowed a whole watermelon. So it was stuck in his throat. So I hit it so it broke the watermelon, then he could swallow it, and then he was okay. So you have to understand otherwise it seems contradictory. You know, here there's a lump in the neck, you hit it with a hammer. There's a lump in the neck, you do something else. Because it's a different thing. The principle is to find the disease and cure it. But how you'll cure it depends upon the disease. So the same way as the Shastras are all speaking to different people with different diseases. Right? The Tamasic Puranas are talking to people with the disease of ignorance. The Rajasic with the disease of Rajas, goodness, those with the disease of goodness. Like this, you know, those who are jnanis, there's scriptures for them to cure their disease. For the akarmis, there's their disease. For those who are into, just all these different things. So therefore you find it seems contradictory. Well, here it says, the king should, just only keep one wife, but here it says he can have many wives, but there only eight of them should be prominent. Like that. And then here, it even says you can get into, improper activities. Steal other people's wives and this and that. Why it's contradictory. No, the first one is for the person who wants to go back to Godhead. The second one is for the person who's religious. The third one is for if the king has fallen into irreligious, consciousness, then this is how, through the Shastras, to fulfill that irreligious desire. So still, it's regulating irreligion. And then from that, then he'll perform his duties as kings, and then the kingdom will run okay. Because if the king gets bewildered by something, then he may be attracted by somebody he shouldn't be attracted by. But if that's going to ruin his running a whole country, then it's not worth it. So through this method, then he can get that girl, and mind will be peaceful, and he'll do his kingly duties. But it's a very low, low level. So by the association of the Brahmins and training, they slowly, slowly become up. Like this. Though it may take lifetimes. Like that. So this is for different people. So you want to go back to Godhead. You don't say, well, see, here it says that the king can do this. Or here it says you can keep many wives. Or here it says, So that's the whole thing. The Prabhupada said, yes, you can encourage. If someone can take care of more than one woman, then they can do. But he said they can't live in the temple and be supported by the temple. Right? Because who lives in the temple? It's the Brahmins. And the Brahmins aren't supposed to do these things. Their purpose is serve the deity, go back to Godhead. They stick to one wife. Like that. Your temple administrators also, because they're living from the temple, they can't do it either. Even though they're taking the position of the administrator, Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas can marry this, that, so many things. Yeah, no. Prabhupada says, no, we're talking about those Kshatriyas who make their own money. You just want, that's not enough. You have to have the facility. Therefore, that person who's resourceful, dynamic, this, that, can set up a huge infrastructure and have personal, private facilities for his wives, then yes. But, who's doing that? Who has that kind of facility? Yeah, complete. So, therefore, it has its thing. We can't pick what we want from here. Oh, here, the Brahmins are the top and they're respected by everybody and everyone should take care of them and respect them. I like this one. And here it says the Kshatriyas, you know, they can have many wives and all these things. I like that, you know. And here the Vaishya, then, you know, he can be, you know, maybe attached to the Shudra here, you know, maybe into sense gratification and all that. And, you know, if a Shudra does this, no one bothers much. See here, the law on the Shudras in this case is very light, but on the Brahmins is very strict. So, you know, like this, I take that one here. And, you know, you go out with your shopping cart and walk down the, you know, the aisles of Varnashram and choose off of it which part you want and, you know, this and that. So you fill your cart up nicely and come back to get it all checked in. And then, of course, you don't want to pay anything either. It should be free. You know, there should be no responsibility, no restriction, no commitment. You know, it's just, it should come. You know, Brahmins are respected. Of course, it does say they're supposed to be respectable. But that I don't have to, I'm a Brahmin, you know, and, you know, so therefore I should be respected, you know. They're supposed to give advice to the Kshatriyas like that, so why the temple president should listen to me and do what I say, how I say he should run the temple, that's how he should do it. But the point is, the king's in charge, he's not a lackey. You know, he's not a peon like that. So, therefore, one has to see. This is religion. Understanding things. So you take what's the proper, the top level. So you have to know, that's why the philosophy is there. Then you can see why all these are there. Because if you take the religion on its own, you may go down instead of up. Take the philosophy on its own, you may go down instead of up. Mayavadis take the philosophy and go down, because there's no, they don't follow properly the religion. You know, like this. So therefore, the two have to be combined. And the philosophy is important until you get to the Brahma-Buddha platform. Brahma-Buddha, then you get situated in your spiritual identity. Then that is the religion. So therefore, the material religion is not necessary. Mundane dharma is... it's served its purpose. It's gotten you to the liberated platform. And after that, it's, you can follow it for example, but for your own personal need, there's no need. Like that. There's no need. You know, you see, Sukadeva doesn't have to follow any of the rules of the material dharma. He doesn't bother with upanayanam. He doesn't even bother with taking a bath after he's born. He just gets up and runs off. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, he didn't even say goodbye. He just ran off. Yeah. So like that. So there's no problem for him. He can do anything. There's nothing. Nothing's good. Nothing's bad. Nothing's pure. Nothing's impure. Because he's not functioning here. He's functioning in the world. There he does everything according to the proper situation, proper relationship. But in the material world, they don't have to. But we see is when asked, then generally we see most of them do. Then at least for that time, then they come to the Madhvi platform, make the distinctions between things, and teach. But we see as soon as he had spoken whatever he was supposed to speak, and Takshika was coming, Sukadeva just got up and left. You know, he didn't need to get any sentimental this, that, and so many things. You know, it's just, he just left. Because he has no duties to perform. So before he acted as a Paramahamsa, after he finishes his discussions, then again he acts as a Paramahamsa. So like that, Hare Krishna. So then again, they took up that. So, yeah.
One simple question. Sometimes it seems when the king performs sacrifice, he gives the nation with the Brahman many cows and many goats, cart load of gold, so that the Brahman began opening Goshana or do the powers or what they do with all this stuff.
What do they do? It depends on the Brahman. If the Brahman is running some big organization, then he'll use that for whatever he needs for that. If he's not, then he'll give it away. Means the Brahman, even a Brahman has to give in charity. Like that. It's one of his duties. He can accept charity if he likes, but he doesn't have to. But he must give in charity. You know, just like the others, the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they must give in charity, they must perform sacrifice, they must study. These three aspects are the dharma of all three. But only the Brahman can teach others, you know, as an occupation, can do sacrifice for others as an occupation, and do and accept charity. Like that. So if they give him 10,000 cows, he needs one cow, that means they'll give away 9,999 to other Brahmins. You know, like that. He won't give the Kshatriyas, he won't give the Vaishyas. He'll take care of if he has any Shudras working for him. But otherwise, he'll just give it to other Brahmins. Like that. So that's the thing. So that's why it says, you know, minimum 50% is given away. He may give away more. Like that. So, but if they're, let's say, they're running a big school or Gurukul or like this, then they may need them all. They may, you know, like you have Vashishtha as 10,000 disciples or Durvasa, 10,000 disciples. So someone gives him something, he may use it because it's being used for all these things. Still, they'll give something away. Like that. If they're Grihasthas, because something must be given for a sacrifice. Like that. So then it's, that would be the thing. They give it away.
Mm-hmm. Well, that explains in Namrabhu, a Brahman just keeps what he needs for the day. Yes. Yeah. He gives it away.
Yeah, that's
because
the best.
He doesn't make any plan for the next day.
No. No, the best is, see, is they can collect, means that they, means all these, they can beg, they can glean from the field, they can accept whatever comes without asking. They can do business if need be. They can plow. They can, you know, do farming. If they can't do these other natural duties of a Brahmin, or they may do any combination. But it's considered is that the maximum is a Brahmin might keep enough stock for a year. That's okay. More than that is not recommended. Plus, it gets old. Your spices, this, that, wrong, old, difficult. Then he may keep enough for, I think it's 3 months. That's okay. He might keep a pot. You know, you see these, I don't know, you see these big jugs, big pots like this. I'm not sure. I think they hold about 100 kilos. But that's a common storage thing of grains, is you keep the grains in these big clay pots. So one could keep that. I think that would be, you know, like a month. You know, or one can keep for 3 days, or one can keep for only the day. So each one is progressively better than the other. So they're all bona fide, but keeping only enough for today is the best. And keeping for 3 days, or a month, or for a year, then these are okay. But each one is less. So it depends upon your situation. It depends upon your own needs, means your own particular attachments and like that. So if you have a bigger family, you might keep more. Or if you're more dependent, the advancement is more independent. Because it will come. Whatever is you do to you, your grains will come. So if you prefer them all at once, then that's how they'll come. Like that. But if you depend upon the Lord, then they'll come every day. Means whatever you do, if you do a year's worth of grain, someone may come and give it to you at one time, or you may every day get a little bit. How much you need.
Would you say that in this age, when Brahmanas are not any longer taken care of by the members of the society.
I didn't hear the last sentence.
But it seems that in this age, the Brahmanas are not any longer taken care of by the rest of the society.
Yeah.
Which means that somehow they have to make.
Well, that's why then they can take to these other, yeah, they take to these other occupations. If things are going right, they just teach or you know, teach, preach, do pujas.
If they are keeping, if they are receiving charity or they're receiving the fruit of their labor, of their work, for their maintenance, they are keeping for over a period of time, does this mean that they're not surrendered to the law?
No, you have to see the situation.
I'm talking about nowadays.
Yeah, it all still always depends upon the situation. It always depends upon the situation. You have to see what is there, what is the mentality. The point is the mind should be peaceful. Those Brahmins that can only keep enough for the day and be completely satisfied and be completely confident that Krishna is going to take care, then they can do that. But if there's some anxiety that, you know, this and that, we've had some experiences, it's been a few days where I didn't get anything, then better one keeps a little more.
But doesn't that mean that they expect the one to serve them?
Well, where did the 1 year worth of grains come from?
Well, they had to. So either they got it from inheritance or whatever, or they had to work for it.
Begging is not work. A yajna is not work, or a puja is not work, or a teaching is not work. So they get, but if they get more, they give it all away except for what you need for 1 day. You know, because by giving that much away, so much more will come to them. Especially if they give it to Brahman. It means you give, let's say you get 10 rupees, you get and you only need 5, you give 5 rupees to just a common person, a beggar, you know, poor villager. Then in the future you'll get 5 rupees back. But you give it to a Brahmin, it'll be much more. You give it to a qualified Brahmin, it'll be thousands of times more. And you give it to, you know, a proper Vaishnava, then you get hundreds of thousands, unlimited return. You know? Or you give to the deities, like this, and it's like... So, this person, let's say, they only need a certain amount. They give it away. But if they give it to qualified people and qualified situations, then the amount they'll get back in the future will be so much more. So that's one way of doing it. Some people are doing it knowing that.
Investment.
Yeah, it's an investment. But they have the faith to work on their principle and the simplicity to do it. You know, it means the renunciation to do it. Same time as others would do it just because that's what's pleasing to the Lord, dependence on the Lord. But the ability to do something, the having the situation in which to use that ability, that it may be fruitful, that's all arranged by the Lord anyway. So whether you work or don't work, you still, it's God's mercy. Because that's the thing, is I work, so therefore I got the result. But that's capricious work, what Krishna mentions in the Gita. Ma karma phalahitur bur. You're thinking, I am the cause of the fruit. You know? So that's why generally for the Karmakandi or the Kanista, Amrita is not recommended. It's not considered a superior form of lifestyle. Amrita means you just take what comes, you don't even make any endeavor. Rita is considered the best, where you go out and just take things that people don't need. Like that, you know. And or begging is also considered better than Amrita. Because in there, then, there's interaction with people. You'll go out, people will get the opportunity to see and respect and interact with the Brahmins. It also creates humility. Like that. You know, so therefore it's good. But there also may be the anxiety, if I don't do something, then nothing will come. So, Amrita you generally see is the practice for the Uttamas, that's their practice. The liberated souls, they just work on Amrita. It's whatever, Amrita. It means just accepting whatever comes.
Continuing this, what I said, it transpired to me that many times maybe the Brahman is not attached to his own personal thing, but because he has a preaching program.
Yes,
so
that's the point.
So he's not like he wants the money for himself because he wants to show that he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He just wants to do some preaching. Prabhupada said, we'll sit under a tree and many people will come.
Yeah.
But then he was eager to go back to the nation. He says, some Namyadi, they don't come for money. When Prabhupada gives you $10,000, you come, you come, everybody's coming. You give me all the money, I'll count it. Because it's not that he's attached to money. But you want to do something with the money, because I know you utilize the money for Krishna. It's not for myself.
Yeah.
Even that. So we shouldn't mistake that for materialistic vision.
Yeah.
If somebody think, oh, you know, this is so tough for me, it's not like that.
Yeah, no, it's a very
fun. You do it for preaching, and once you maintain your preaching or whatever, you know, for the benefit of general.
It's an important point.
Because sometimes people get...
Yeah, well, because see, means the materialist can't tell the difference between material activity and devotional activity because it looks the same. But at the same time, as the neophyte may have problem telling the difference between sakam bhakti and nishkam bhakti because they'll also look the same. The sakam is out looking for money for himself and his family and whatever. Nishkam is out looking for money for some, you know, preaching project or some other things. No, say, so much money spent, you know, flying here and there, but they're flying here and there to preach. You know, it means, you know, it was a couple of years back, I remember there was a thing came up recommending that the sannyasi should do more walking. You know, they should become real sannyasis. Why all this bogus sannyasi business, right? There was never one resolution or discussion even about real grihasthas. No, it's always the real sannyasis, the real gurus, the real... They must be something out of Satyayuga. And of course, it's Kali Yuga, so the grihasthas are just being natural and just doing whatever you can do. You know, you have to be practical for food. But the sannyasis and gurus have to be out of the Satyayuga. Even that's not good enough. You know? So then that is a difficulty, is that whatever they have will be used in these things, you know? And it's practical. You know, it's like on the train, how many grihasthas, Western grihasthas, travel on the trains in India, you know, second class? Generally they'll go, you know, AC. You know, if they're from the West and they have to, it's not convenient. They'll generally fly, and if they can't fly, then they'll take AC. Some variety, two-tier, three-tier. Some will take the other. And that they're coming and doing one trip. Right? They're in the house all the time. They fly once to India, then they travel, you know, once down to Mayapur and then back, and then fly back. Like that. But these others are always traveling. And if you always travel, it gets so tiring to be sitting in this, you know, in the same thing with the guy smoking the beedi in your face and asking all the stupid things and this and that. Well, and, you know, and it's cramped and this and that. Well, if you travel in the AC, then generally, because they paid more money, the people there are more gentle and more considerate, and then you can, you know, it's easier for your traveling. Otherwise, if your train journey was hellish, and you've just come from one kind of program, and you have to go to the next program when you arrive there, you know, there's some special like cultural thing that went. As soon as a sannyasi walks in the door of the temple, it doesn't matter he's been flying for 24 hours and changed planes 20 times. As soon as he comes in, then there has to be, you know, kirtan and lecture and this and that, and we're going on and harinam, and you know, then, you know, of course, then after all, then there'll be some prashad and all that, and we're having this program, and, you know, it's like there's, you know, so then, therefore, if the journey wasn't also a little bit peaceful, you know, whatever, you take the minimum, whatever peaceful, then how are they going to be absorbed here? So it's unrealistic. So then, and then who's going to pay? Is the temple going to pay? Maybe the temple pays, but it's much easier if the Swami pays. And so people give him donations, and then he uses it for flying, and why people should complain? Why does he have money? Sannyasi shouldn't have money. Yes, he shouldn't have money. All your grihastha should pay for his tickets and his food and his clothes and everything. But if you're not going to do that, then those few who are, then let him use it, and then all of you will benefit. Like that. So one also has to tell the difference between sakam and nishkam. Otherwise, then that is one of the symptoms of a kanista, is they can't appreciate the devotees. There's always something wrong with the devotees. So that's the neophyte. Some motive is there, you know, some emotional motive like this, you know, like you see the, even in the Ritvik thing. What's the, one of the basis is Guru fall down, so therefore we can't handle this anymore, so the easiest thing is get rid of Gurus, right? So it's an emotional, material emotional motive. My emotions have been disturbed, therefore we want to make a change the philosophy so my emotions won't be stirred. This is not devotional service free from karma and jnana. They want to change the philosophy, jnana. Through the use of jnana, they want to get their motive, which is karma. You know, their emotions. So it's not free. And favorable is that this Krishna wrote the scriptures, so you're changing it means anything against scriptures is not favorable. Like that is the thing. So then right there, that means that person has to be, by definition, a kanista. Has to be. They can't be on a higher level. Otherwise, how would this be the basis? Or they don't recognize devotees, you know. Only has to be uttam, you know, but so much endeavor is made to say a madhyama is the guru. You know, if you can get an uttam, that's better. But it's not saying only uttam. It says pure devotee. Pure devotee starts from madhyama. So then these are the difficulties, is that it's all just as the more you go into it, the more you just see, it just has the kanista flavor. Or so many, you know, how you say, administrative arrangements to perfect the society. Society's not going well because we spent all those years, you know, doing Harinam and preaching and this and that, and now we have no social interaction, no community, and no grihastha ashram. No. So therefore, we're going to turn to the materialists and we're going to put together this wonderful spiritual community. You know? That's like saying I'm going to cook a cauliflower sabji, but I won't use cauliflowers. I'll turn to something else. You know, it's like you can't. Spiritual community is based on spiritual, so therefore one has to know how to use it. That's the thing, rather than change. So we see, therefore, that's maturely motivated. You want it to be why? But why it should be prosperous? Why should the grihastha community be prosperous? What for? You know, one has to be able to explain it. Well, that's practical, because everybody knows you need money, but why? Why do you need money? You know, what's wrong with starving to death thinking of Krishna? I mean, you have to explain that. Otherwise, it's just sentiment. Right? You know, like that. You know, yeah, that's been a problem all these years, as you talk all this philosophy, but what about, you know, the real people out there, you know, their real feelings and all that. But explain why we have to do it. So if they can't explain, then they shouldn't speak so much and make resolutions and make movements and make this and that, because they don't know. So it's just some sentiment. Sentiment changes. So if they can explain it, that yes, this is the dharma of a grihastha, therefore these things, and then, but within that, how to fulfill that desire through the dharma, and why dharma? Why not irreligion? You know? And then of the two, which is, but the thing is you have to, grihastha should be engaged in the Lord's service also. So then, which do we engage in Krishna's service? Irreligion or religion? You know? So then naturally, then it comes to religion. So this is why it's being done. So therefore, artha is going to come from dharma. I don't hear any talk of dharma. I only hear straight talk of artha. You know? All these years, I've never once heard a talk of dharma. It's artha is going to come on its own, which means the people talking don't understand how the material world works. They don't understand religion. Material energy works in a certain way. It's a machine. Right? And this machine has been programmed to work in a particular way, and it only works in that way. And so therefore, the key of the material world is dharma. By dharma, you can get anything within the material world, and by dharma connected to the spiritual world, you can get yourself out of the material world. So dharma is the key. As far as activities and all those things, you know, then the essence of the Dharma is Krishna consciousness. You know, it means engaging everything in Krishna service. But what is the what is that everything? How do you engage everything? You know, like that. You know, it means yeah. So that means so one has to see this whole thing. Otherwise, then it's just sentiment. That's all. It's just a lot of nice talk, but the reason there's so much speculation is there's no religion. Or when they get down to talking this, there's no philosophy. Therefore, it's just sentiment. So that one has to be able to balance these. Otherwise, as long as these two aren't balanced, the social structure of the society will never. It's impossible for it to be balanced. If you swing from this side to that side, that's not balanced. You know, because it went this side, then you bang it and it goes flying to the other side. That's not a balance. Balance means if you want to balance a stick, let's say you get a nice stick and you want to balance it on your finger, it can't be done roughly. You have to get it and very carefully just adjust it a little too much that way, a little pull it back, a little bit this, that, till you get it perfect. You can't, you put it on here and it's too far this way and then shove it that way and it's going to be balanced. It'll just fall off the other side. So that's the thing. And so this is the balance. We talk social. Social is mundane. So mundane works how the mundane works. Mundane has a nature. You know? And nature means religion. And religion is made by God. So the nature of everything, even the mleches and yavanas, is still made by God. Manu, Lord Brahma, speaking about the mleches and yavanas, like that, has already told what their nature is. Millions and billions of years ago. So mleches are nothing new. Western culture is nothing new. It's nothing new and special. You know, it means one-tenth of the whole cycle of the yugas is spent in the Kali Yuga. You know, and of that, what we call modern society is modern only now. You know, you go back a few years and things were... you're hearing from Uttama Shloka. He was telling me that in Italy, the first time he saw what we call now a Western toilet was in 1955. He said in his house and all the people that he knew, they all had what were Indian toilets. They called them Turkish toilets, like that. And they cleaned their backside with water. They had a special thing where they'd turn water and they would wash it for you. You didn't have to do it yourself. But that was just the normal thing, up to 55. Then he saw in public places and all that, then was introduced these things. He said, as far as he understood, they came from England or somewhere else like that. And you go all throughout the Middle East, you go into Central Asia, all the way over to China and Japan, like that. Everybody uses the Indian toilets. That's the whole. Now, of course, it's modernized. But the modern world is quite new. It's pretty new. So something so new, we shouldn't be so confident of. I mean, if it can change so quickly one, it can change so quickly the other way. You know, like New York just changed in a matter of 18 minutes, I think. Right? Like that. That was it. Completely changed. People who just came from New York just told me the people in New York are still very much affected. They're very different than what they were before. The whole economics, everything's been changed. The families, things, everybody. It says it's very much been affected. And that's just one moment. Just so changed. You know? You take Afghanistan. They had this very heavy fundamentalist Islamic regime. And then within a couple of weeks, that was gone. And now they have, they have a democratic, Muslim governance. So just like that it can change. So all this, so much that it's important means it's there. One has to be practical, but then one has to, that practicalness must be in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, how is it practical? If it doesn't get us Krishna, if it doesn't bring us closer to Krishna, what's the use? So therefore, whatever we do, we have to see it in line with what is religion. So even like in business, it's called Satyanrita. It means it's half truth, half lie. You know, so this is the Vedic understanding. This is not a mantra, it's a Vedic understanding. You ask the person, how much does this cost? And then you'll always see they say, for you, and there's some pause. You don't go, how much does this cost? And they say, 50 rupees. They go, for you, 85 rupees. That's for you, it's 85 rupees. The price is 50 rupees. Well, so when they're saying for you, they're thinking, how much I can get off this guy? You know, how he's dressed, how he thinks, is he a slow, is he clever, is he, does he know what the price is, this, that. He's looking at all that, and he has to say something. If he could get 85 out of you, and he only said 50, then he would be feeling bad. You know? And, but if he can, you know, yes.
So, am I interrupting you?
No.
What about devotees practicing Vaishnava activities?
Means you can't be 100% truthful, because you can only become 100% truthful if the buyers are 100% truthful. I've seen it myself. I've been sitting there when two devotees are discussing price. One is saying, you're a devotee, you shouldn't charge more. And the guy's saying, it costs me this much. Okay, I'll tell you. It costs me this much. And business, you should make 20% profit off of that, because you have your overheads, this, that, you have to reinvest, and then only you'll make some profit if I take 20% above the thing. Therefore, it costs me 1,000 rupees, and so then I'm charging you, you know, 1,200 rupees. And then they say, no, but I'm a devotee, why you should charge 1,200? And then they say, why should I have told him the price? He was being honest, but the buyer was absolutely dishonest. Otherwise, he would have said, yes, it's true, I'll give you 1,200. You know, instead of, okay, you know, you could have charged me more, but you're being honest. No. It's like, no, you should only take 10%. But the guy doesn't know it's about business. I know myself. The one guy is a millionaire that was doing the business, and the other guy, it doesn't have a penny in his pocket to this day. And then he's telling the businessman how to run his business. And then this other person, he's trying to do business and he hasn't made a cent. Like that. So that's why you can't be honest, because people in this world are honest.
So then the standard for the Vaishya is is there a standard?
The standard is he should sell things people need for a reasonable price. That's the standard. You shouldn't sell things people don't need. Like, people don't need alcohol and cigarettes and, you know, meat and, you know, they don't need all kinds of nonsense magazines and, you know, these things. So therefore, those businesses, means a materialist may do, but a devotee would avoid. Things that people need, and he sells it for a reasonable price. He doesn't take so much that, you know, it's going to be a problem. You know, but at the same time, you can't take too little. It's like tax for the government. They can't take too little, otherwise they can't run the government. And they can't take too much, otherwise then the people can't handle it. But the difference is there's a regulation. The government has power that they could take more. But they're supposed to protect the people. Well, the Vaishya, the person has to like what you want and buy it. So therefore, if it's too much, that'll govern it. You know? So that aspect is there. So that's why it's not considered the best. You know, business isn't considered best. For a Vaishya, they would prefer farming or cow protection, because it's much more straightforward. But if that's not available, they'll do business, they'll do banking. You know, banking also, they shouldn't take too much interest, like that. And depending upon who they're taking it from, they'll take. Brahmins, they would take less. Vaishyas, they would take more. You know, this, that. Depending on who it is, then they would adjust. So according to religion, they would make a distinction. They would know, okay, this person's a Brahmin, I will charge less. You know, this person has money, he should pay. Because this person can pay, it's not a problem for him. And other people who can't pay, then in this way he adjusts his thing. So it's just the reality of it. That's the point, is that it's not a matter of intellectual, it's just the way it is. Just like governance. Governance has to be done in a certain way. It's just the way it is. People have to be disciplined. Somebody has to say this is what's happening. And somebody has to do it and take responsibility. We can say, no, we'll get together a committee and they'll all take this. But you'll see that committee. Which committee takes responsibility? Something goes wrong, then you go back to the committee, hey, what is this nonsense? Well, I personally didn't vote for it, those guys did. No, but a committee means every member takes the responsibility. We don't find that, because it's not management. Committee can't be the top. Committee is part of the management. It's an important part of the management, but it's not the management. You still have to have a person. We're people, so we're going to be managed by a person. This idea is that New Age is like, I'm an individual, so that individuality must be recognized, but governance must be impersonal. Right? It's a group of individuals, but nobody steps forward. You can't have if an individual steps forward, no one can tolerate that individuality. So it's a very weird thing. So therefore, governance is discussed amongst Kshatriyas and Brahmins. It's not for the common person, because they won't understand it. You say politics, and everyone, oh, this is bad, why are they political? You can't run a government without politics. If the world was full of pure devotees, yes, then you could do it. But since people are motivated, even devotees, politics must be used, because politics means you deal with that is individual. No politics means it's impersonal. Politics means it's personal. Politics means this guy here, we have to deal in this way to get this done. So it's personal. The king, having a king or having a leader is personal. Not having a leader is not impersonal. So therefore, that dharma can be understood by certain people, and others, they don't bother with it. Just like someone else doesn't understand business, they shouldn't do it. You understand it, then fine. You don't understand it, you don't. You know, just like art. How many people understand art? You know, how to paint or sing or dance or cook or do anything. You know, so those who don't know, they shouldn't be. The person who can't cook shouldn't be telling the cooks, wow, how come it takes so long to make this? You know, 15 minutes should be enough. The person, you know, has probably boiling water might have a trouble burning it. I've seen this also. You know? Wife's in the kitchen, 3 hours cooking this, that, it comes out. Why did it take so long? This, that, it's only a few potatoes and this and that, and yeah, a few potatoes and this and that, and going to the market and cutting it up and this and that, and, you know? And so many things, and you know, it's completely. So unless they know the Dharma, it's like you can't live. So if you don't know, then stay out of it, don't speak on it. Just, you know, it's not your area, you don't know, so then you hear their advice. Right? A king, if he doesn't know a particular field, then the Shudra in that field, he'll ask him. Right? Like if he doesn't know how to fix boats, and they need to fix boats, he'll call, you know, a master, you know, boat craftsman, and ask him, what does it take to fix a boat? What wood is best? What does it need? What season? This, that. He'll take fully his advice. He may check with a few, you know. But he'll take his advice. He won't say, I'm the Kshatriya, I make the decision. But we see that going on. You know, devotees will do that because they're the president, therefore they know everything. You know, you have a farm. Which farm do we have that farms? Right? Means the rice that people eat here in Mayapur is not grown here. The rice that's grown here is sold. And with that, they get money. And then with that money, what do? Grow more rice. Right? But there's not, there'd be nobody sitting in the administration would know anything about farming. There's been some few people that have been there, but they're not asked. When it comes to what's going in the field, no one ever calls the person in the field there. So therefore, you know, there is no farms in our movement. We call them farm communities, there isn't one. If they have a farmer, then yes, some farming is going on. You know. So it's like this is the reason the Dharma is so important. Is that otherwise it doesn't work. And all basically all the modern books of management, this, that, all they're doing is talking about Dharma, though they don't know they're talking about Dharma. I'll say, this is the nature of the person, right? Okay, what is this? Very famous. You know, men are from Mars and women are from the, you know, Venus, whatever it is, or from the moon or someplace. You know? So then, but what does it do? It gets down to what is the nature of a woman and a man. Woman thinks like this, says that. Man thinks like this, says this. Man is doing this, it means this. Woman is doing this, it means that. It's just Dharma. But if you say it's Dharma, then immediately it has a bad name. And why does it have a bad name? Because amongst those who are not from a pious background, Dharma is a bad word. So from Lecha's and Yavana culture, Dharma is bad. Because it's restriction, and senses shouldn't be restricted. They don't want that. So therefore, it's not understandable. So in the same way, just like businesses talk with businessmen, administrations talk with those who understand it, you know, the different things like that. So the same way as Dharma is then meant for those who value it, who are religious. But that's all it is saying the nature. And that's all the Shastras are saying. Right? Shastras say, okay, the guy's wife is bent out of shape. Why is his wife bent out of shape? Well, you check. You ask her, why are you upset? Because my husband's off talking with this woman, that woman, this one. You know, goes beyond the boundaries. Okay, he's a grihastha, he's talking, you know, this and that. But it goes beyond the boundaries. And so therefore, the book will conclude, therefore one should be careful. I think I saw one book, it was like 10 stupid things men do or something. Right? Written by one woman. You know, they're so stupid that they go off with other women. They're so stupid they do this. It's just 10 chapters on how men are stupid. All it means is that they're misapplying their relationship with the woman. Misunderstanding or not noticing or being ungrateful or, you know, something. It's just Dharma. But the Shastra says that. Manu says that. Mahabharata says that. Bhagavatam says that. But if Bhagavatam it is, then oh, that's not practical in this age. Right? Only Kavi is practical in this age. Right? Give it 10 years and people will spit on Kavi. And they'll say, he didn't know, this guy knows. Right? Dr. Spock. How many kids were raised by Dr. Spock? You know? Everybody. As soon as they get pregnant, I got buying Dr. Spock books. You know? Like that. And then when Dr. Spock was 80 years old, then he figured out, I was wrong. You got to discipline these kids. You got to keep them in line. Otherwise, you end up with animals. Because he had this philosophy. He took it through, saw the people grow up. And then he saw that what he planned at fructify never did. And then he saw in places where they did exactly the opposite, basically, of what he said. Then the kids came out nice. You know? But, you know, what's an 80-year-old guy going to do? You know? So now we say he's crazy. So therefore, that's all this thing, modern, have to do this and that. Okay, but then figure it out yourself. You figured it out, great, then we'll listen to it. But you figured out him? Okay. But then, okay, if it works, but why does it work? Right? There's a Vaishya saying, if it works, it's truth. Right? Because truth means Dharma. So if it works, it means you've applied it according to the Dharma. You talked to this person, you got the result you want, meant you applied the Dharma properly. It was truth. But they strip it of its you know, social and, you know, the whole religious flavor of the emotional platform, you know, the higher uplifting platform. It just becomes brought down to simply an economic level. Or for the Shudras, they'll bring it down to a sensual level. You know, the jnanis will take it into a speculative level, like that. So then, the truth means it's what works. So if it works, it means it's how the material nature. Or if it does, then there must be something in the Shastras that says the same thing. It says the same thing. And then it works nice. So one can take these books and get from them. But generally you'll see the only people that get from them are people who already understand the system. Someone who is a manager could read a management book and get something from it. You know? Because basically they can manage, but with time they may work it out. But you save time. You look at this book, this guy says, oh, in this situation do this. Okay, I never thought of that. He'll be able to go do it, use it immediately and done. Or if not, After 3 years, he'll figure it out. But this way, he looks at it, he learns it quicker. But someone who's not a manager can read unlimited, every management book on the planet, and they'll still not be a manager. You can still give them a wet paper bag, put them inside of it, and they won't be able to get out. Right? So, like that. So, it's someone who is a manager can manage. And the funny thing is the guys that write these books know it. Right? Because it says, 7 habits of successful, you know, persons. So are the successful persons reading this book? No. The book is a study of them. Who's reading the book? The ones that are unsuccessful. So now if you add 2 and 2, then you get it that the guy writing the book has gained vast knowledge, and the guy writing the book is making vast amounts of money. The guys that can follow those principles are already doing it. The people who can't follow those principles won't be able to do it. But at least they've been informed, and the guy made some money. But that's the reality. And what I'm speaking here is what one of the guys that has written one of these books has said when asked. Like that. One devotee, he used to go to these things. It means before he became a devotee, he would attend these things. And then afterwards, he sat there, he was contemplating everything. Everybody left, you know, because they've got the thing, all this, that, they got other business things, they're busy, they go. And at the very end, when the guy was closing his briefcase, you know, putting his papers, closing his briefcase, the place is empty. All it is in there is this one devotee and the guy that gave the big management lecture. And he walked up to him and says, "Can I ask you a question?" He says, "Sure." He said, "Now, what you've spoken is all very nice, but of the people who are here, how much benefit will they get from it? Will they actually be able to follow this?" You know? And he says, "In reality, no." He says, the people that can do it are already doing it. These are the people who would like to do it. They'll never be able to do it. Maybe one or two will get something from it, of course. But, you know, if it takes 100% to manage and you get 5% out of it, still, you're not a manager. Like that. So he pointed that out, this point blank. These are 2 karmis talking. This wasn't, you know. So it's just, they know. The guys on the top that are running this world, they know what's going on. You know? And everybody else, they play along with the game. Because they've worked out how to make the game work. Right? Yes?
So only by Krishna's desire, someone who becomes a devotee can change and take on a different dharma.
You don't have to take on a different dharma. It does, but still, the conditioned nature, you generally see they prefer that. Though, they're a Brahman who's, you know, likes to do these various things. Because a Brahman is one who knows Brahman. It's not important to change the nature, it's the quality of the nature. Just like boldness. Boldness can be a very good quality or a very bad quality. You know? Second-hand car salesman is bold. You know, and people never like second-hand car salesmen. You know, but a young child is very bold. They just walk up to you and start talking or this, and everybody likes. You know? Or somebody who's bold is, "Okay, I'll take it up. Okay, we got to get something done here and this and that. Okay, I'll do it." You know? But it's, you know, no ego, but just all take the challenge. And everybody thinks, okay, here's somebody dynamic, you know. If you have senior men, they'll say, okay, here's an up-and-coming guy. You know, we'll keep our eye on this guy. So the same quality is good and bad. So that's the whole thing, is it must be purified. That's the process of devotion. We don't have to change the nature. We have to purify the nature. The nature, you're not going to change. Arjuna was going to change his nature. He's not going to change. Like that. So it's a matter of seeing what the nature is. By association, you take on the nature. So then if you're in association of all kinds of rascals, then you're going to generally act like one. You come in contact with devotees. You may have had a brahminical nature, just in this. Jagai and Madai, they were from top-grade Brahmin families. You know, but they were the worst of the worst. But then when they came in contact with Lord Chaitanya and got his mercy, they were purified. And then immediately they were up on very high platform, very gentle and everything like that. Very, very gentle. So then, if we saw one devotee here in Calcutta, comes regularly to Mayapur, that their family, they would deal in, I think, mechanics, in a car shop. You know, big. And you know, mechanics is a rough kind of thing. And the deep people you deal with, they're all kind of rough. And it's, you know, mechanics is just like that. And they were very rough themselves. And then they became devotees. Then people who knew the family, I don't know if they were friends of the family or they were just business associates or whatever, when they saw how much they changed, that person became a life member. Just based on that. Right? And the guy before, he himself said, before I became a devotee, I would not eat one leg less than a whole chicken every day. He had to eat that. And then he became a devotee, and he's so gentle. You know, like this. Before, they're out there, you know, just cutthroat businessman. Absolutely ruthless. And now he's just so gentle. They still do their business, but it's just, and they're still successful. But it's just in his dealings with devotees and others, he's just so gentle. You know, it's almost like a little kid. He's just so gentle. Like that. So it's a matter of purifying the nature. You don't have to change the nature. Let's say someone was an artist before, let's say a musician, they don't have to change that. But they can change what their purpose is. Instead of singing for their own pleasure, singing for others' pleasure so they give money, now they can sing for Krishna or go out on Hari Nam all day. So they're engaged in brahminical activities, preaching work, this and that. But it's still because it was an artist's nature. So they like to do that. They may not be so interested in puja or this or that, but they only like to do that for the deities. So therefore, because of that mentality, they're Brahmins. They're technically the conditioned nature, may not be, maybe Shudra. That's why a Vaishnava is never called a Brahmin Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. You can call them Brahmins, but that's like the minimum. You know? But the others, it's not important. It's just important to know, okay, my nature works like this, so therefore, if I'm a salesperson, and I'm going to work for a businessman, therefore I have to understand the social structure. The businessman is in charge, I'm the salesman, I do what he says. I don't like what he says, I go work for someone else. I like what he says, I listen. And if he's a good businessman, successful, he will ask me, what's selling? Right? He will see, okay, now it's time for buying new stock. You know, which saris were going. And then it says, well, you know, this season they were very much into, you know, the light colors and this and that. And so then they'll consider why. You know? And then they'll decide, okay, then we'll buy more of those. Or no, now it's that because of summer, now it's changing into this. Now what's the experience? Well, last year then they got into these kind of things and these patterns. So therefore then they'll buy that. Same time as he himself is not dependent upon them, he takes their advice, he makes his own decisions, because the decision is his. He can't come back to the salesman and say, hey, you said. No, he took the decision, he bought the stock. So if anybody's a fool, he's the fool. Well, why are you listening to the salesman? You should check yourself. Therefore the kings, they listen to the ministry, same time they check. The ministers tell them what's going on in the kingdom, they still go out and themselves personally and check. So this double both ways. So therefore if you understand what is the nature, therefore you know, okay, I'm doing this, therefore I should act like this. I'm doing that, I should act like that. If I'm the businessman, then I should act like this with my assistants. If I'm an assistant with a Vaishya, I should act like this. I'm an assistant for a king, I should act like this. A assistant to a Brahmin, I should act like this.
Right. Sometimes devotees go through some crisis of identity, like in the try to identify and this. Then sometimes the nature put it that way, so, oh, maybe I'm that. You know, it's like somebody has to be really introspective into different stuff and figure out what is you can do best with its nature and qualities.
Yeah.
I see many devotees are kind of things, because they can't figure out how to interact anymore. They would like to be the best.
That's generally the problem. Yeah. Is the best is defined as doing whatever you're good at for Krishna, to the best of your ability. That's the thing. Because best means whoever is most prestigious, most power, most wealth, most respect, that's best. So therefore you'll find, you can have a meeting. Previously no one would be less than the Brahman. Nowadays some people will say they're Kshatriyas, and even occasionally you'll get someone, if they're actually a successful businessman, they'll say I'm a Vaishya. But if they're not, then generally it's rare someone will take that. But guaranteed, 100%, I can remember to this day hearing two devotees say, I'm a Shudra. And those two devotees, they were top quality Shudras. It means perfectly performing the Dharma that the Shastra says. Though they maybe don't know the Dharma, you know, the Shastra, but perfectly following. Like that. Perfectly, you know, whatever it is. They were talented, they were loyal, they were, you know, they knew who they were working for, wanted to get done. They had the same mood to get that done and benefit, you know, who they were working for. Always ready to work at any time. I've seen wonderful like that. You know, very, very much more, and the quality is gentle. They were real gentlemen, you know. But they said, I'm Shudra, because I do this work. You know, but their quality of character was so much higher than pretty much everyone else who claimed to be, you know, any other varna but Shudra. They were so qualified, cultured, you know, someone you'd like to spend your time with. Like that. A two. You know? All these, any meetings you go to, this, that, no one's a Shudra. No one wants to be the Shudra. That's the main thing, is talk Varnashram, but let's forget Shudras, right? You know, it's like, everyone's going to be, you know, the Brahman, and then everything's going to happen, right? You know, or everyone's going to be the... Yeah, okay, if you want to run a pawn shop, yes, okay, then you'd be the businessman, you know. You want to make a big business, you know. We've got life members in Calcutta. 10,000 people work for them. Right? So those are Shudras. So then, how do you have a big business? A businessman wants to be a businessman, he has to have Shudras. Somebody has to be the Shudras. No? Governance, you have one king, how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of Shudras work for him? All the secretaries, you know, cleaning the place, the stables, the, you know, the charioteers, the police force, you know, most of his, you know, army, meaning all the foot soldiers, it's all Shudras. Otherwise, you know, how are they going to run? So it's like, but that's the problem, is introspection is fearful, because then I may be something that I don't want to be. You know? Like that. Like even for us. Prabhupada said, we're doing these Brahminical, one Brahman. I think he was some kind of intellectual. It's in a conversation. They asked Prabhupada, why is he engaging all these, you know, Malechas and Yag? Okay, they're Vaishnavas. So why are you engaging in all these Brahminical activities and they're doing the preaching and this and that? Wouldn't it be better they do some other, you know, Vaishnava activities, you know, chanting, reading, studying. It's okay, great. But why are these things, you know, all the deity worship? He says, because the Brahmins aren't doing it. So in an emergency, then Narada Muni says they can do it. In Daiva Varnashram. In a Surik Varnashram, no. It can go down, it can't go up. Brahman could do a Kshatriya work or a Vaishya work. Kshatriya could do a Vaishya work. Vaishya could do Shudra work, though he best to avoid it. And a Shudra can go from working for someone to being a freelance artist. But it never goes the other way. Though there is one verse that basically points out that no one should due to pride, take, or due to, you know, desire for gain, take a higher position. It just says that. So that means it leaves the opening that they could take it if it was necessary or like this. But only one verse. It generally just makes everything go down. But Narada Muni and Daiva Varnashram, because you're dealing with devotees and that, therefore they could take higher ones if it's needed. And so Prabhupada said, therefore, we're doing it. If the Brahmins will come forward and do all these things, great. Everybody will step back and let them do, and they'll just assist. But since they're not doing, therefore, we're doing. So we can't be attached to these things. Because it's not important. The material prestige, the facility, it's not important. like that. If one does, you know, an honest day's work according to his nature, one is satisfied, whatever it is. Like that. And if others are also know the Dharma, they'll recognize the importance of it. Now, generally we think of, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they spit on Shudras. No, they respect them like anything. Like that. But it's just, you know, it's that means that the you know, that each one does what they know. Like that. Yes.
Sometimes we can read that Shudras are those who cannot follow religious principles. In this sense, they are Adamic Shudras.
That's outside. That will be tribals. That's below Varnashram. Shudras are gentlemen. Shudras are high class. Shudras are, their weaknesses is that they lament because of attachment to material facilities and emotions and relationships. That's their weakness. Since the purpose of the whole Varnashram system is to get out of the material world, then for them they're weak on that, on their own. There's no drive on their own. Even if they've gained it from the devotees and in the devotional service, yes. But on their own, they'll tend to, because of ignorance, go and stop on this. So only if there's some passion that you want to get something, then that keeps something going. You know? Like that. So that's very common. So depending upon also the class of the Shudra, then it'll be more or less. You know? It means like you have a Shudra who's a, you know, that it's like, say, he's a you know, you take someone like Vidura, like that. He was the prime minister for Dhritarashtra. He was so qualified. But his children won't sit on the throne. You know? But how qualified he is, how cultured, how everything, perfect. Like that. But then, you know, you see other, and he's motivated himself to get things done. He can work on this higher platforms. But you see local village people, if they have, you know, it's like you see, you want to get some work done. And you're running at a nice, decent price, fair enough price for someone who's always working. But then when the 2 weeks comes along, when they're planting season, or harvesting season, or the juice season, oh, they're out making, you know, half again as much or double the money. Ah, they couldn't care less for your job. Who needs your job? After 2 weeks, they're going to need your job. But they're so foolish, they can't see to that. Like that. We see it. You know, every year when these seasons come around, they again do it. And then you get rid of them, they come back, oh, please give us our job back, this, that. No, but you don't need, you're doing this, you're making big money, go make big money. No, we're not seasonal. So they'll mess you around in that, or they got some money in their pocket, they don't even bother coming to work because, you know, they got money. You know, they have 10 rupees in the pocket, they're rich forever, you know. And then tomorrow when they already spent it, then it's kind of like, well, I guess better go to work. You know, so you get that at the lower end. But so the weaknesses is that attachment, that lamentation. The difficulty to follow nicely. So within that you have a broad range of shudras. And so the devotees, they're taking the upper end. Because they're technically Brahmins. They're Brahmins because they're interested in Brahma. They know Brahman. They're working for Brahman. Their goal is Brahman. That's a Brahmin. But the conditioned nature is such that it's not by nature Brahminical. So they're comfortable in a situation that matches that whatever that is. You know, if it's some variety of art, they're comfortable doing it. But their art, they're doing it for Krishna. They're painting about Krishna. So they're technically Brahmins. You know, I know one of our you know, more renowned artists, he knows thousands of shlokas, thousands of verses. You know, he's such an intellectual. You know, it's not like Picasso, Salvador Dali, they all had philosophies. You know, they're artists, but they're you know, they're interested in higher things, you know. So you get these. So with a devotee, it's just he does this service for Krishna because it's for Krishna, it's Brahminical. Shudra technically means one who does it for himself. You know, but here they're doing it for a higher purpose. They're doing it for yajna, so they're Brahmins. Though the activity they're using is that thing, but Brahmins could also know that. They could know these things. But generally they won't use it as an occupation. Like Drona knows martial arts, but it's not his occupation. His occupation is teaching. So when he comes on the battlefield, then it's his occupation. Then for he's a Kshatriya. Therefore, Arjuna can fight with a Kshatriya. Like that. So that's technical. So they don't make their money off of it. They do it for the deities. And then if they're taken care of by that process, yes, but it's done for the deities. But if they want to go out, they want to paint, you know, signboards for the shops across the street and make money, then they can do it. Then that would be called Shudra by occupation. But the other is they're Shudra by nature, but they're not using it as their occupation. Or even if they do, they're using the higher end of it. Like this. So it's a very, there's so many overlapping things. So that's the reason it's difficult to, it's not just a cut, it's not a 5-minute discussion. Okay, we'll sit down and how to implement, you know, today is our discussion, how to implement Varnashram. No, it's like you have to understand what is Varnashram, what is devotional service, you know, like this. Then what is the purpose of Varnashram, where does it fit in? Because it fits in, it has a perfect use, but it doesn't, it's not all day. It's just like to cook. To cook, you can't cook basically without a pot and a knife and spoon. But it's not that all day, whatever you do, you carry this pot or put the pot on your head, and, you know, and the spoon you hold in one hand and the knife in the other and walk around all day. And do you sit? No, it had its purpose, and when it's done, it's done. So Varnashram is, and without that, you were not going to be able to cut up your subject. You won't be able to cook your subject. You won't be able to stir yourself. You have to, you can't do it without it. But it has its limit. So Varnashram, certain things can't be done without it. But at the same time, it has its limit. Once it's gotten you to the liberated platform, there's no more. It's not, it won't give you bhakti. It'll remove the obstacles of bhakti. But you can use it as a medium to cultivate your bhakti. But it itself is not bhakti. Using it for Krishna, that's bhakti. But the thing itself is not bhakti. Like this table. Is this table bhakti? No. It's a piece of wood. It's dead matter. But using it for Krishna, that's bhakti. But now how will I use it? Will I use it as a hammer or a screwdriver? Or maybe a shoe? No, that would be a dharmic. It means I don't understand the dharma of this table. It's a table. I take the table, put it down, put a book on top of it, not underneath it, on top of it. Then that is understanding the dharma of the table, and I'm using that dharma in Krishna's service. Therefore, using it according to dharma, that is devotional service. Like that. But the dharma itself is not devotional service. So that is the thing. So that's why we can speak both highly of Varnashram, at the same time we can completely write it off. We can do both. So this is the thing. Some devotees will say, no, Prabhupada totally into Varnashram. Others say, no, Prabhupada was not into Varnashram. Right? And they're both quoting Prabhupada's books. Because Prabhupada isn't using it for Krishna consciousness. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that's it. We just see the nature, just use it for Krishna. That's all. It's not a big deal. You know, some experience, some training, and this, and then one gets, you know, wants some study, like that. Okay, we should probably end here. Yeah, we didn't even start the class. This was the before class discussion.
I thought I came late.
No, it didn't come late. Even if you came now, you wouldn't have come late for class. No, he asked a question before class, and then this is what's been going on since then. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. After class the other day, then one of the senior devotees came up and said, the last Varaha Dev's appearance, he says, another class on Varnashram. Like that. You know, they were thinking some nice Leela and Varaha, and then somehow that we didn't have time to prepare. So.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Josh. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainita Gaura Premananda ki.